Welcome to the Africa Speaking Podcast. The podcast discusses critical issues about the African continent. It is brought to you by Teresa Communications in Nairobi.
Welcome back to the final part of our crucial conversation. I'm your host, Maslin Nyambala, and we are continuing our exploration with young innovator Laura Koech. Today, we are uncovering even more about how bamboo tree farming can create tangible adaptation and stronger communities in the face of climate change. Let's unlock its full potential. I'm looking at what you're saying and wondering, why isn't bamboo more widespread? Why didn't we know about this bamboo?
I can guess at three or four reasons. The one of them just being like, in the way that we had utilized it previously. Either we lost something in translation, you know, as we transited from our previous indigenous way of living to this new modern way of living. We definitely lost something. Because I remember my grandfather, when I was growing up, did not fence with, what is it called? The chain link, this one. This new modern one. He didn't. He used bamboo.
Yeah, bamboo was used to fence.
That was his fencing capacity. So we lost that knowledge, you know, that indigenous form of knowledge. We also lost the bamboo themselves because they were cut but not replaced, or they were overcut. In as much as it's really resilient, you know, I think they were dug up for so that people could use them for other things.
Are they using it for firewood?
You definitely can.
All right.
And you can do it in a more sustainable way. Because, you know, if you've put bamboo in a fire, it does the whole... So to avoid that, and this is a business idea, my friends, is using bamboo as charcoal briquettes. So you take the bamboo, you crush it, you compress it, and then it becomes like more, it burns for longer. It burns for longer, burns hotter because it has a higher calorific content. So we lost that knowledge, and we lost the bamboo itself. And just people not knowing that you can value it.
And now you are just coming back to... You being young.
Yes.
And a lady.
Yes, yes.
What is the reaction of people when you say you're a bamboo farmer? Since now you've been doing this work and putting so much of your time to it.
Yes, yes.
What is the response? Because there's a youth issue here.
It's difficult in the sense that it's not a traditional career path, choosing to be a farmer, choosing to particularly do bamboo. I think for a lot of people, it's not shock, but like surprise and awe, you know?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, bamboo. I didn't know you could plant bamboo and become a bamboo farmer. I didn't know you could do all these things with bamboo. So there's that. And, you know, for those that know my educational background and know, you know, so it's twofold. So the strangers are odd and they're like, oh, this is such a great thing you're doing. My family would wish that I was doing something more structured.
Yeah. What would you tell other young people, like who may want to venture in something like this?
That there's plenty of opportunity and that we need more young people, you know, thinking of new innovative climate solutions to these challenges that we are having. But specifics, as I just meant, like I just gave that one idea. We know I personally can't do the charcoal briquette, but someone can.
You see a huge potential in
I see a huge potential in that.
Yeah. And it can get funding.
It can get funding, but it also doesn't need funding necessarily.
It doesn't need funding. It's economically viable in itself. Once you start
to fund itself,
it will fund itself because people are looking for alternative sources of energy.
Yes.
And coming to the issue about resources, how can people who want to do, like those farmers, organizations, is there a way they can mobilize more resources to do this work? What are your thoughts based on even the resource that you acquired? How can people get more resources?
We cannot lie that this question being asked in 2025 has a different answer than it did, let's say, in 2020, you know, in terms of just the sheer amount of money that is still existing out there. To, you know, economic times have gotten harder and harder, and we can globally, you know, locally and also globally, we can agree upon that. And so I recognize that it's very difficult to tell people, oh, just go on the internet and look for funding and you'll get it. it's still definitely possible to do it. But even just like small local solutions, you know, with your neighbors and your friends and the people who you live next to. You don't necessarily have to like plant, like buy my seedlings for the bamboo, you know.
How much are seedlings?
They are currently going for anywhere between 150 to 200 shillings.
One seedling.
For per seedling, yes.
Okay.
They can buy from my farmers or their own farmers.
Or their own farmers.
Yes, yes. Okay. And you don't need that many per area because they grow really big. The spacing is almost the same as avocado. So it's about 5 by 5 meters spacing. And so you don't need that many. Half an acre, 100. Yes.
Then harvesting every 6 months?
After 5 to 7 years, once they're all grown, you harvest every 6 months in almost perpetuity.
And then now, based on what you've done so far, have you seen any legislative gaps, challenges that you may have faced?
Thankfully, not yet. Our government, as flawed as it might be, you know, there's still like positive things about it. As I mentioned with Kefri, having someone dedicated for the support services, you know, and the general conversation around 15 billion trees, you know, and how we're working towards that.
Yeah.
So in the future, what we would be hoping for directly is, you know, subsidies.
Subsidies
for bamboo products, you know, and all bamboo production and all establishment, and or just tax subsidies for those of us who are in this business on the fact that like it's a lot more sustainable, given that, you know, it grows, it regrows, and you're not cutting it down completely, you know. That's what we would be hoping for, and just, you know, support in terms of export and creating those sorts of partnerships. But in general, you know, what we would hope is that they leave us alone. the government would, you know, leave us alone.
Leave you alone. Not following this or
just
that.
Leave us alone, thankfully, to do our project. But no, we've not had any trouble so far. And we're not hoping to have any, given the fact that we are very much aligned, all of us working in this industry, and all of us working in climate change and mitigation are aligned with the government's necessity to keep us going.
All right. Yes. You mentioned that you got quite some information from Kefri.
Yes, and some support, depending on what you want to do, just go to Kefri.
Yeah.
If you want like to go in like particularly with trees, just go to Kefri in whatever tree that you want to plant and
whichever
ask to
tree.
Speak. They have experts for everything.
They have experts for all species.
For all species.
Wow.
And these are individuals hired and paid by your tax money to wait for you and support you as you're trying to set.
So what do you think is the gap?
Well, we don't know.
Communications.
It's communications, yes.
Okay.
And they are more likely to then have, these Kefri people are more likely to then have, you know, direct knowledge about what layers of funding are accessible.
Yeah.
And they're able to directly help you to start, you know, and deal with like the governmental bureaucracy. So when we were importing the seedlings, we worked with the Kefri people, and they are the ones that, you know, dealt with all those tax compliance aspects.
When you're importing?
Yes.
So the seedlings you...
No, we have to import the seeds from China.
The particular one you wanted was not available in Kenya?
Not in the quantity that we want. And I don't think the industry has matured to that level where we are producing seeds.
Yeah.
Seeds. It looks like, it looks like wheat.
Yes.
The seeds of the bamboo look
like
wheat.
It looks like wheat, yes. There's nobody producing the seeds.
Not yet.
Could it be you?
In 70 years.
In 70 years?
Yes.
I thought in 7 years.
No, 70. It grows, it matures in 7 years. How the bamboo grows is that it grows, and at when it's dying is when now it flowers, produces the seeds.
When it's dying. And when does it die?
70 years.
Oh, wow. Now it's because of the Chinese long tradition.
The fact that they've been doing this.
They've been doing it in large quantities.
Yes, in thousands.
That's how they have the seedlings.
The seeds, yes.
So it's something that this generation can give to the next generation.
Yes, yes.
So what could you maybe tell us from what I've read? This is a really, really best practice in issues to do with bamboo or climate change or the work that you do, something that you saw works so well? Is there one?
Best practice, you know, on a personal sort of, you know, selfish level, I'll just to recommend that everyone has at least one bamboo.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
In the corner of their property somewhere. Because they grow really tall. There's some species that grow up to 1 meter a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, really?
Yes, they get up to 60 meters. You hug some of them. The species I'm talking about, the giant species, you hug it like a tree.
Yes.
Like the pole is like the size of a tree. And so, you know, one won't hurt. And then you'll have consistent poles that you can utilize.
So when you're saying that, is it... particular counties or
that can grow this?
Yeah. Or you're just saying maybe Nakuru alone or?
No. So, yeah. You know, the beauty with being on the equator is that you don't have that huge of a gap in terms
variation.
Of. But that variation in terms of climatic differences, yeah. You know. And so I'm sure what you can plant in Nakuru, you can plant anywhere. It has like bamboo has a sensitivity to altitude.
Yes.
But that giant species I'm talking about, I've grown it in the hills of the Mau. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
Just one.
Just one.
And it's scenic, you know.
Yeah,
you can put your nice little bench somewhere and then you drink your tea there in the morning.
Yeah, you're the poster girl in Kenya for bamboo now. Wow, okay. So based on the nature of bamboo and in terms of land, maybe land acquisition, and you want to do it, looking at it, it's really long-term.
It's definitely
so
long-term.
So what can you say about land? Because when it comes to the women and the youth, sometimes they don't have land. What could you say? How could somebody navigate this?
If that becomes a very difficult conversation if you don't have the access to land. But... I don't know the legalities of this. You know, you can plant it on the side of a road.
I like that. You can plant it on some road somewhere.
On some road somewhere. Like, we have land that people have access to publicly, you know? Mm. And there's a difference between, like, say, planting one cypress tree in your community land that you have access to and planting one bamboo tree. You can harvest the bamboo tree way more than you can harvest the eucalyptus. So if you finding land access somewhere, because you don't need that many and you don't need that big of a land again. Like as I said, it does take up some space, but you can plant on the side of the road, you know.
I like this suggestion. It's a very Gen Z.
It's a Gen Z.
It's a very Gen Z like suggestion.
You know.
But what about groups of youth, groups of women? What can they do? You know, like what could you recommend? Maybe access a piece of land? Or
you know, heavily would encourage, you know, individuals and organizations that are working in this to, if they can acquire this land or access it in some way. And the accessing it in some way, that's why I brought in like this government land. It would be very easy as a community-based organization to go and request access to utilize, you know,
a piece of some space somewhere. We want to plant, you know, some tree.
Even the market.
Yeah.
You know, in the corners of the market.
They just give you that space.
You plant,
but it is yours for harvesting.
And you can take care of it.
You negotiate.
You take care of it. And you're providing shade also for these.
You're providing shade and you may offer some. We'll give you this. We will sell this. Oh, I like the suggestions.
If there is land and you have legitimate access to it as a member of the community, as a member of a family, of the locality, we should, you know, utilize the land that is ours.
You know,
before it is taken away from us.
Yeah. But the ultimate goal is you're improving the environment.
Yes, you're improving
you're cleaning the soil, you're cleaning the water, you're replacing the eucalyptus.
This access to land that is available in my village, I've gotten permission from the chief, or rather I give the chief of my local area the bamboos to plant in the chief's compound that is government land, that is our land, it's our community land. I have also done it with the local, with the schools. So we have the local schools that we have. Local schools actually generally have a small, they would want a small forest. And they're usually working with community-based organizations to plant forests, to plant trees in their compound. So work with schools, work with hospitals. Yeah. Hospitals that have compounds would require, you know, a resting area for their patients and whatnot. So if you can, it's a good shade tree, you know.
It's a good shade tree.
Because it goes really big and wide. So if you're planting shade trees, align yourself to be in that direction.
Yeah.
Yes. I've also like planted one in the small town center. Again, it's a village, like
small
village center with like less than 10 buildings. But there just so happens to be right next to the stage where the matatu stop, to be a bit of land or a bit a patch of grass.
Yes.
That I have placed one tree on.
How are you predicting the incomes? Or you've gotten funding and the funding allows you to draw maybe a salary or something.
Yes.
How are your incomes playing out?
As with any business, it's up and down.
Yes.
I was very lucky to get a grant funding from Delta 40, which is a venture studio that's based in Nairobi, to run the first pilot bit of it, you know, that got us to a place where now we have this bamboo that has been planted and we have a nursery that is ready that has produced now, and you know, we'll be ready to start selling in the next less than 2 months. They're growing. We're waiting for them to grow. We've planted them, they're just growing. And so that's where I'll be drawing the bulk of the next round of income. But you know, in between selling potatoes here, selling something else there, we make it work.
You make it work.
Yes.
But you're saying Delta Studios, they're giving grants or?
That was a grant.
For the sake of other youth who may want to listen and say, okay, let me put my foot there.
I will not say that it's easy. I will not say that it's comfortable.
Yes.
Because it's not. You drastically reduce your expectations and your, you know, general disposable income. But certainly it's for time, you know.
It's a for a season.
It's for a season as we're working on building this new opportunities.
Yes.
So there's a sacrifice.
Yes.
But it will pay off. You talked about solutions to minimize use of harmful chemicals.
It's actually a new practice of farming called permaculture, which seeks to be minimally invasive and impactful on the soil. So the core of it, and I'm sure you've spoken about soil health being the key and the key most important thing that as farmers we should be working towards. And so in addition to sort of measuring the health of your soil and testing it and seeing what you have going on in there, is that the traditional farming practices of tilling the land and whatnot, it disturbs the health of the soil, because the health of the soil is in the fungal networks that is happening underneath the soil. And so you don't want to disturb that. And so personally, outside of the bamboo, you know, on the other bit of the property where I'm doing a bit of subsistence farming, and on that section, I am actively trying to be fully organic and utilizing permaculture in this way. So if the health of the soil is good, then that means you don't need as many fertilizers or as many pesticides and whatnot, because the soil itself is healthy. And so one of the key philosophies around permaculture is the not disturbing the soil and keeping it covered, you know. So in this case, weeds are actually good.
Yes.
We don't remove the weeds.
You don't remove the
weeds. Yes. We don't remove the weeds because you want that soil covered. And we do raised beds. So you only till once to raise your beds, to have your raised beds, and then you don't disturb it again.
Yes.
So you have your raised beds that you keep on topping up with compost.
Yes.
And mulching it.
Okay.
You know, to keep it covered. And then in terms of, you know, if you need fertilizer, the compost itself should be. So then there's the whole compost creation process that you are working, you know, with whatever animals that you have on the farm, and also all sorts of other green matter. But if you don't have access to that, we are utilizing, and you need a bit of nitrogen in your soil. Did you know that human urine has all the nutrients that you need?
Okay.
As a soil, right? It has the nitrogen with the ammonia.
Yes.
The potassium and the calcium.
Yes.
Right? That is like all excreted in your urine.
Yes.
And sodium as well, you know? And you don't need that much because you can dilute your urine.
So where do you get the urine?
You collect it.
In your house,
yeah,
from yourself,
from myself and the members of
your family,
family, because my family is not there at the farm, but like, yes, the workers that live there, you know, we are working on filling up. It doesn't take that long to fill up one container of the 20 liter container, and that's all you need in a
so. Will you put a specific place, like maybe this a collection center,
collection, just you know, put a container in like the corner of your bathroom, somewhere,
yes,
you know. Your outdoor bathroom. Yeah,
and so then you could recommend.
You can recommend. Please fill this container. You know,
okay.
As you do your business, and once you have that, you dilute it, and you know, add a bit of ash so that it neutralizes it.
Yeah.
And then you spray it like as you would.
So you're saying it has nitrogen. It has calcium. It has sodium.
Sodium and potassium.
All that are needed by the
plants.
By the plants.
Yes. And, you know, we are innovating as a result of that in new ways of dealing, because it's not just, you know, fertility, it's also pests and diseases. So we are innovating new ways. And the diseases bit, as I mentioned, is if your soil is healthy, your plants will be healthy.
Yes.
You won't need to be concerned about your... your diseases.
Yes.
Right? So diseases is taken care of by the health of the soil. The pests now is now the innovation bit that we're still working on. So particularly where Nakuru County is, where I come from, is a huge potato growing area. And so this year I shall be attempting to plant potatoes without the chemicals that everyone insists that you must have to plant potatoes. And I shall be, you know, employing this strategies to see if, you know, the combination of the health of my soil and all these other organic ways of dealing with it shall be useful. And so with the blight, I shall be testing out a new strategy that I was told about. Please do not take this as advice yet, because it's not been tested out. Or you can test it out. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But the testing bit is utilizing mursik.
Mursik.
Yes, our traditional milk.
Yes.
In a diluted format to try and see if you can control this. Because then it's
But where did you draw the idea of using mursik? Is there something that was done before? Is there something, maybe somebody poured milk and something happened? Where did that idea come from?
The idea came from a friend of mine that's also a farmer that was telling me about this. So
but he was just telling me about
like the mitigation of pests and diseases using mursik.
And it has worked for him.
Yeah, it's worked for him on like aphids and all these other types of pests.
Yeah.
But like not like a fungal type, like blight, which is a different thing. So we are testing that out, and we shall be able to provide results and
on how, that will,
on how that will work out.
Wow.
But, you know, the one thing I have definitely and has been banned from the property has been Roundup.
Yes.
You know, fully banned. And I'm working now to convince my neighbors, because then it's like my water table is very highly dependent on my neighbors and what they're using, you know. And so I'm working on getting my direct immediate neighbors to like forego the utilization of Roundup at minimum. They can use other things as we work on that, you know, because once we have healthy soils, we can continue feeding ourselves. And I think that's I guess, our job as stewards of the planet is to keep it. There's actually a free permaculture course if one wants to learn about how to do permaculture for themselves, offered by the Oregon State University. And it's free, available online. And so you just go to Oregon State University Permaculture. And then they have like an actual design course that is, you know, paid, that they also have scholarships for, and it's completely remote and you can do it anywhere. But then they also have a free version that's just like an introduction to the philosophy behind it, to the best practices around it, and, you know, just generally recommend that people just take a look at that and see what applies to them.
Yeah, you're the poster girl in Kenya for bamboo now. Wow, okay. Yes. Any last remark as we close?
Just last remarks as we close. Generally, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yes.
I cannot understate that.
To reduce it, yeah.
Yes, and consider replacing your eucalyptus with something else. And I guess if anyone wants to connect with me,
yes,
they can find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Laura Koech. Laura Koech is my name.
Laura Koech.
Yes.
Karibu sana.
Asante sana.
Thank you.
And that brings our eye-opening two-part series on the power of bamboo farming with the inspiring Laura Koech to a close. Thank you for joining me, Maslin Nyambala, as we explored this vital pathway of building resilience.
Thank you for listening to the Africa Speaking Podcast. Join us in our next episode brought to you by Twiza Communications in partnership with Forum Sieve. For any comments and views, you can reach us through our website, www.africaspeaking.org. You can also reach us on Facebook, Twiza Communications, or on our X handle, @twizacoms. You can also write to us on email, info@africaspeaking.org.